Support for GLT's Grow comes from Chris Holderly at Advantage Lawn and Landscape, offering customized services for commercial and residential landscaping and property design, including staging for long-term growth during all seasons. Proud to serve Central Illinois. Details at growingadvantage.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
According to a Reuters survey, 64% of Americans drink coffee at least once per day, and I call those one-a-cup day drinkers amateurs. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert, Patrick Murphy from Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum. We're going to take a short break here over the next few weeks from the practical to and talk more about some interesting things we like to eat and drink, coffee, tea, and chocolate. And today we're talking about coffee. Murph, thanks for stopping by.
I like coffee, Mike.
That's the way I feel. Yeah, that's why I feel about 11 o'clock every morning after several cups. So most of the coffee in the U.S. comes from Latin or South America, but there is a domestic coffee, domestic market. Tell me about domestic production.
Well, historically speaking, California and Hawaii are the main places in the United States where coffee is cultivated. The California growing was a bit of an experiment, and the coffee was grown in avocado groves. Conditions are good part of the year for that. And as you've informed us too, Mike, there's a Puerto Rican coffee market is starting to expand, and it is a growing market.
And with the avocado groves, this is a way for those farmers to sort of transition. Some of those avocado groves are aging out. So they're moving into different crops as those avocado trees die out.
Yes, it's my understanding that the avocado trees, like lots of other orchard trees, they reach a point of diminishing returns, and it takes a long time to produce another avocado-producing plant, so they're kind of doing some intercropping. And also I think that just the land management has increased, and the awareness of that coffee is something that people desire, and they want more of it. And I think there's even a marketable association, because Northern California is known for lots of delicious things, wine in particular. So it makes perfect sense that they're trying to grow some coffee out in California.
Well, until we started looking into this, I didn't realize that there was a growing Puerto Rican market, and some of that's being exported. I had no idea there was Californian coffee. Hawaiian coffee, Kona, I've had. It's delicious. Can you talk a little bit about the flavor profiles of all three of these?
My understanding is, Mike, that the flavor of coffee is a combination of several factors, from the location of where it's grown, the soil profile of where the coffee is grown, but then the real influence comes with how the coffee is dried prior to roasting. So in all parts of the world, a lot of times coffee is not the only thing that farmer is growing. Coffee and cinnamon go hand in hand. Cinnamon trees and coffee groves are common in the equatorial belt. Cashews, all the things that we read on the label that enhance the flavor of coffee were used in drying the coffee, either directly or indirectly. Indirectly in the case where they might have dried apricots on these large platters on the ground, and then after the apricots are done, they move the coffee beans in, so they pick up some of the residue, if you will, of the coffee. So I'm a big fan of the Kona coffee too, but I think that there are a lot of coffee makers that put Kona on the label, but that's not what's in the bag. So that's something that you can tell just from reading the label.
So read your labels if you're a coffee snob.
And if you're a coffee snob, keep this in mind too. There are lots of what I call restaurantrepreneurs that have opened up coffee bistros all across America, and they are themselves acquiring coffee from these distant markets. Puerto Rico, Central America is my favorite because I like the huehue and the huachatango kinds of coffees that come from Guatemala. That's helping the Puerto Rican effort. The ability to travel and favorable markets, bringing all this exotic coffee back to the States.
In fact, the Coffee Hound, I don't know if they're still doing this. At one point, they were securing all of their coffee from a plantation in Costa Rica, I believe.
Wonderful.
And supporting that plantation by buying all of their coffee.
I think that's a fantastic initiative. And when I was doing a little reading preparing to meet with you today, I even found that Iceland attempted to grow some coffee in greenhouses that were heated with volcanic steam. Sometimes coffee ventures are successful and other times they're not.
This one didn't work out?
Yeah, maybe there's just not enough coffee to export it. It's just staying in the town or the region where it's made.
It might be cheaper to do that than it would be to import it into Iceland.
Iceland's a different story, that's for sure.
So we've talked about Iceland, of all places, Puerto Rico, Costa Rica, California, Hawaii, Latin America. Where is the world's coffee generally grown? If we're looking at a map of the world, what are we talking about?
Well, the equatorial regions that pass through Central America and the African continent are the greatest. But then you have, you know, Sumatra and some other Polynesian and Indonesian types of coffee, but they're still in the equatorial belt. So Africa's a number of countries. That's a big division now in the gourmands that seem to snob it up on the coffee, and I'm one of those people. I prefer the Latin coffee over the African coffee. And some people, including myself, think that there's a difference in acidity in that broad group.
Altitude plays a factor here, doesn't it?
Well, I believe that all coffee grows at high altitude. And when it's not at high altitude, it's different. The bean might be smaller. You might have periods of growth seasons where there's no coffee produced at all. I think elevation has a lot to do with the quality of the coffee.
It was interesting for me to learn that coffee affects other unexpected ecosystems. Tell me about wooden coffee stirrers.
Well, the whole curiosity for me with the coffee stirrers was based on a life experience of somebody telling me on one occasion that they reduced the acidity of coffee. And so when I got to looking, I found that there's not a lot of evidence to support that, but I stumbled across the fact that white birch is oftentimes used to make the coffee stirrers, and the unintended botanical outcome, if you will, is that when they remove the birch trees from to harvest the lumber, they oftentimes encounter aspen trees, which are removed. The aspen trees survive because the roots can allow that tree to regenerate, you know, kind of like in Western forest fires. But the birch trees do not. So they come back, the aspen trees come back, the birch trees do not, and then things become
unbalanced.
That's right. Huh. So that's kind of the unintended outcome of the desire to have the wooden stir stick. But the wooden stir stick, it's not absorbing any caffeine any more than it's just absorbing some coffee that has a little bit of the acid or caffeine or whatever it is you think that it's eliminating. There's no scientific evidence of that. And I consulted with people at Illinois State University, biology and chemistry, to talk about that, and some of the fundamentals of both of those sciences do not align with that theory.
Maybe the best coffee stirrers should come from bamboo, which is a more sustainable crop.
I think that's a great idea.
So the price of a cup of coffee might turn into a luxury item. How is climate change affecting coffee?
I think pollinator cycles are being altered by changing weather patterns. It affects coffee. It affects the plants that we love to grow for show. So roses, coffee, it's all going to get affected by the climate change. And the pollinators are essential to the plants growing and producing flowers and ultimately producing the fruit in the form of a coffee bean. That makes a lot of sense.
And what about diseases? Could that be a factor as well, climate change-induced diseases?
It could be, because some of the beneficial insects and pollinators, they have something to do with the availability of food and other life chains. So, yeah, if you interrupt the pollinator chain, you're probably also interrupting some other beneficial insects that might protect coffee from other plant predator insects.
And you can only go so high up on the mountain to grow the coffee. So as things warm up below, you can only go so high. There's a narrow band there that they can grow the coffee.
Coffee and corn have a lot alike. When, you know, the less there is, the more it costs.
So if you have questions about coffee or anything, any growing thing, submit them at WGLT.org. Next week, we'll talk about tea. After that, we'll talk about cocoa.
That sounds like a great cold weather drinking plan.
Sounds good to me, too. That's Patrick Murphy. I'm Mike McCurdy. Send your gardening questions to WGLT.org/grow.